And welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host for a special international edition coming to us from Rome. We're joined by author Father Wojciech Giercik, OP, his book, Faith and the Emotions, a Theological Inquiry into the Human Heart, proudly published by EWTN, naturally available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com, for all things Catholic. It's great to be with you once again, Father. We talked recently about your other book, How to Live by Grace, and you were also a few months back in August, you were with Father Mitch talking about it as well. So let's talk about this book, Faith and Emotions, a theological and psychological inquiry into the human heart. Why did you want to mix faith and emotions? Aren't they contradictory, or how do they go together?
I don't think they're contradictory, because faith is not contradictory to human nature. Grace doesn't destroy nature. It brings out the goodness of human nature. And so the living out of a relationship with God through faith and charity has an impact on the entire human person, on liberty, on the emotions, on responsibility, on the undertaking of various challenges. And so we have to be able to articulate in some way what is the relationship between faith and the emotional sphere. The emotions are bodily, is something that animals also have, but how does the engaging with God transform the person, including this bodily, psychic part of our being that are our feelings.
So you also talk about this in relation to a couple other books, Faith and Freedom, Faith and Responsibility, you've also written, that are also kind of dealing with a similar format that you put here, which is a little more popular in nature, right?
Yes. I have written, basically I write in Polish, now I've moved to translating my books into English. But I've written four books on fundamental moral theology, addressed more to advanced students who are trying to clarify the principles, and to priests who are teaching morality. Whereas I saw the need of presenting the same themes in a more popular, simple way, with diagrams, with pictures. So I was thinking about university students, or even the high school students of the last classes, or where people need to go through the basic principles in a more simple way. And that's why with diagrams, to show the clarity of the Thomistic teaching, which has something important to say about how we function. And so that's why I've written three books, and this is the first one of them about the emotions that has appeared in English.
As you indicate, there's diagrams in here in the beginning, right at the front, natural powers, habits and acts, natural powers, habits, acts, spiritual and sensitive. Were those things you developed, or those things that you took on from other people's work?
Most of the things which I write, I've taken from other people's work. And these distinctions to which I refer, they are present in all Thomistic teaching about anthropology and about ethics. But a student who is beginning is sometimes lost in the distinctions between the bodily, the psychic, the spiritual, the grace functioning, and how to put it all together. So I thought that a certain diagram at the beginning to which the reader may refer to see where we are, to locate what is being said within the fullness of the human person, that this is useful.
Right. You talked about the idea, and I hope this book will help young Christians to understand their emotions, integrate them within a spiritual life centered on Jesus Christ. You say, you talk about, I first encountered this doctrine with a couple of Dutch psychiatrists who saw the value of Thomistic psychology in clinical practice dealing with emotional disturbances.
Yes, I think years back when I was doing my first studies in spiritual theology in Rome, I hit on the works of Anna Terue and her disciple Konrad Bars, who moved to America and translated her works into English. And these were really books, the first books that I read, which really showed me the validity and the practical usefulness of the Thomistic synthesis. Anna Teruwe was named by Paul VI, was said by Paul VI to be a great gift to the church. And she and her disciple have seen that the Thomistic explanation of the structure of the soul and of the human psyche gives a better structure to explain emotional disorders than what was proposed by Freud. And so they switched from referring to Freud to a Thomistic basic anthropology in dealing with emotional disorders and helping people to come out of them. And this is important, that when people do have emotional difficulties and they do search for some therapy, that this has to be explained in a terminology which is concomitant with that of Catholic moral theology, of the spiritual life. If they speak with a completely different language, the person is even more confused.
Right. Well, you say that here.
So that's why it's important.
Right, even though they are distinct, Christian spirituality, morality, psychology overlap. So the language of theology and psychology have to be compatible.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Otherwise, the person is confused.
Right. You also say what has to be said about the healthy functioning of emotions has to be located within the presentation of the spiritual life open to grace. Explain.
Well, sometimes people who have emotional difficulties think that it's enough that they go through some psychological therapy which will help them to handle their emotions. But if their spiritual life is undeveloped, if the engaging with God is absent or is or maybe theoretically named but practically absent, then they tend to focus only on their psychological experiences, and sometimes they think that this is the spiritual life, which is not. The spiritual life is on a deeper level. And if we relate with God, and if we trust in God, and we are open to His grace, then in time, certain emotional aberrations, which many of us have, in time they are worked out, they're settled. Whereas if the spiritual life is missing, then the person may focus only on emotional difficulties, and the whole life is sort of turning around in a circle. So that's why this relationship to God has to be put straight, right in the beginning.
You say feelings are captivating, and even more so, they can carry us away in such a manner that we sometimes find ourselves wondering afterward whether this is good or bad. So how do we figure that out? I mean, are we supposed to just follow our feelings?
Well, we have feelings, but we are not just composed of feelings. We also have the reason and the will, and we have the conscience, which is the act of the reason, not of feelings. And so we have the capacity to choose the true good. Well, here I would refer to that other book that you've just published in EWTN, How to Live by Grace, where I explain more, the fullness of the human psyche in various aspects, including liberty and the moral qualification of acts. All this has to be put together, whereas this book, The Faith and the Emotions, is just a segment of that other book, explained in a more practical way. And I think that just as, students in high school study mathematics and they learn principles, so we need to know the principles of the functioning of the emotions. And this is apart from a colorful and engaging a perception of the emotions that we have in films or in literature, where we are shown the movement of the emotions and the attraction of the emotions, which of course is a part of our being. But if we only describe the phenomenon of emotional feelings, but we lack the skeleton, we lack the structure, the understanding where they are located, how they function, well, that is not enough. And so I am aware that this book doesn't, comprehensively deal with the emotional life. It gives the bare skeleton. But I think this is necessary for our self-understanding.
Right. It's necessary, however, to live one's own life and not one according to recipe found in textbooks. Which textbooks are you talking about?
Well, some people refer to psychological works I think that some people mistake sanctity with moral perfection, mm-hmm. and others mistake sanctity with psychic well-being. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go to any bookshop, you'll find plenty of books about psychic well-being, you know, mm-hmm. about training, about gymnastics, you know, about food that you eat, you know, about psychic training, you know. It's all focused on the self. Whereas we mature and we grow when we mm-hmm. focus on God and we focus on the other. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that we have to amputate our emotions, our feelings.
Right, okay.
You said a truly humane person uses the emotional sphere.
Right. You say the emotional sphere, like the spiritual powers of reason and will, is the domain of the operation of divine grace. You go on to say, I do not mention this divine influence parenthetically as if I were ashamed of it. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that's been a problem sometimes in the church, that we have been?
Well, I think maybe, you know, sometimes if a priest had some sort of grave problems, a bishop would think to send him to a psychiatrist or mm-hmm. a psychologist, you know, to help him to deal with that. Whereas I don't deny that this is sometimes necessary, but that is not all. What is more important is the deepening of the relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And so it's a question of the spiritual life. And so the person may need a profound retreat leading to an inner conversion, and not just focusing uniquely on the emotions, which may be disturbed. Mm-hmm. And so the two have to combine. And that's why there is a relationship between the order of grace, mm-hmm. which we experience through faith and charity, and that of our psychic sphere.
Right, perfect. You say, when I say I want, we are engaging the spiritual powers. When I say I feel like, we're describing an emotional experience. However, our I is not the soul alone, but the soul with the body. Why is that an important point?
Well, you know, some people are incapable of making the distinction between I want and I feel like. Mm-hmm. Well, that is not the same. If I want something, I thought the matter through. I have an argument. I can explain why I'm going for something. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like this is something which I passively feel. And I may feel one, I may feel another. The feelings change. They are dependent on certain external impacts which arouse us. But feelings are not the core, the center of our human being. Mm. They are important, but they have to collaborate with what we really want. And I think young people often have a difficulty with this distinction, with being able to distinguish between their fleeting emotional states and what they really want, what they mm-hmm. really perceive as really true, as really good, for which it's worth to give one's life.
Uh-huh. Now, I don't know if you're a musician, but you said feelings are like the strings of a guitar. What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, if you play a guitar, mm-hmm. there is a sound, there is an immediate reaction. Mm-hmm. And if you play one string, the other strings also react in a lesser way, but they also react. So if you feel emotions, these emotions have an impact on the emotions of other people. That's why a crowd may suddenly be in elation or in fear or in anger. Mm-hmm. The emotions pass from one person to another. And sometimes there are people who are playing on our emotions and are trying to elicit the emotions. We have this in advertisements, which are constantly trying to move our emotions so that right. we will buy some product. And we may be moved by the emotions, buy it, and then we come out of the shop and wonder, why did I buy it? Right, do I really right. want this?
Right.
Well, we are moved by the emotions, by our feelings.
Right.
So, you know, it's not the same.
Right.
A mature person doesn't deny the emotions, but makes the decisions on a deeper level.
Is that where prudence comes in play? Would that be, you know, kind of?
Well, prudence is one of the cardinal virtues. Mm-hmm. I prefer to translate the Latin word prudentia as creative resourcefulness.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's the capacity of putting oneself together and moving from intention, decision, sometimes deliberation, to the execution. Now, the emotions do come into it, the intention, the decision, the execution, though we may do something with passion. Right. But the prudent person is capable of assessing, knowing why, what I do. And in modern moral theology, prudence has basically been ignored, and the entire focus has gone on the conscience. Whereas in classical thinking, this forming of the interiority of the personal liberty was of prime importance, to be of prime importance, and I think it is.
Right. You say the emotions fundamentally, by the very fact that we naturally possess them, are good, all of them, including feelings of sadness, distaste, and anger. And you talk about this being the residue of original sin. And you say feelings should not be extinguished, nor should they be artificially stimulated. Now, we don't hear a lot about original sin anymore.
Well, that depends where you are listening, whom you are listening. But the emotions intrinsically, since they're created, they are part of our being. So they are, as created, they are good. And morally, we could say they are indifferent. But the question is, what do we do with them? But as a consequence of original sin, and as a consequence of the sins that we have committed, we often experience disorder in the emotions, and then there's chaos. And so the question of putting them in order and clarifying what is it that we really want, and focusing on the true good, and in faith focusing on the living God, this is important, and this helps then to sort out the disorder in the emotions. That is why I always insist on the primacy of the theological virtues over the moral virtues. Sometimes people, seeing disorder in themselves, they think they have to struggle with this particular disorder, whereas the more important thing is to establish a deeper relationship with God through a regular prayer life, through a regular encounter with God through the sacraments and prayer and the study of the Word of God. And then in time, the moral order finds its balance, and the emotions also find their appropriate balance.
Right. You talk about there are two kinds of emotional response, so two distinct sets of emotions are distinguished: the urge to attain pleasure, you're talking about concupiscence, that appetite, and the urge to struggle, otherwise called the irascible appetite. I don't think I've ever heard that, irascible appetite. What is that?
Well, this is a tradition that goes back to Aristotle and Aquinas follows, that he perceives two sets of emotions, and they can be turned differently, the emotions leading to pleasure and the emotions which are utility emotions, which serve the emotions of the pleasure appetite. Now, both Aristotle and Aquinas distinguishes these two sets, and Teruwe and Bars have perceived that sometimes these two are blocked, and so the blocking of the two sets of emotions causes neurosis, which Freud had noticed. But the cure is not by the rejection of the moral teaching, which was the conclusion basically of Freud, you know, be free and let go of external restraints. The moral law may be correct and good because it's in accord with human nature, but the reception of it may be emotional. And when there is an excessive focus on the emotions of the irascible or the utility appetite, some people are led not by prudence, not by charity, but by fear, this is a scrupulous person, or by anger, by energy, which somebody tries to control himself by force, without really believing that God may work within him, and this generates a rigid, closed personality. And so the equilibrium between these two sets of emotions is of prime importance. And it's important that, you know, young people learn about this, you know, study, that they know about this, that this is how they function, whereas how to name it more colorfully in life, in their experience, that is another issue. That, but if you have the basic principles, you can then sort of see where you are.
In the section, Faith Opening Up to Grace, you say religious elation has a certain value, but it because it moves the whole person, but not too great an importance should be attributed to it. You go on to say the strength of an emotional religious experience is by no means an indication of the quality of faith and of a real openness to the power of God. Have you seen people who misunderstand that?
Well, yes, definitely. And I think particularly people who are tied with the Pentecostal tradition and charismatics sometimes focus too much on emotional experiences, but also others who may like a more retro-style traditional liturgy will focus on art, on the music, on the setting of the church. And they find that pleasing, that experience, which of course is somehow conducive to faith. But in itself, the strength of the feelings that we have is not decisive about our relating with God. And it may be that you may be lying in bed, sick with cancer, feeling pain, feeling sadness, feeling alone, and at the same time you may relate to God in faith and charity. And you may have a true spiritual encounter with God, even though the feelings are contrary. Mm-hmm. You may be angry at somebody who has angered you, and yet you relate to God and you find a way of dealing with the anger. So these are two different aspects. Right. Now, some people tend to think that the strength of their engaging with God depends what they feel during prayer. Mm-hmm. So they will close their eyes, they will hold hands with somebody else, they will sing and try to force their emotions to feel something. Well, this is inappropriate. We are not to force our emotions, and we cannot force ourselves to feel God, to feel the proximity of God. Faith is the encounter of the mystery, the extending of our reason and the will towards that which we cannot fully understand, but we accept as a gift of God. And the emotions here are secondary.
In the section on emotional difficulties, you say, it kind of alludes to what you were saying, we all find ourselves wondering from time to time we reacted in a particular way in a given situation. Then you ask the question, is it ever possible to come to terms with ourselves? Is it?
Well, maybe in some sense we struggle with ourselves all our lives, but certainly not as we used to struggle as adolescents. And so as we engage with God and live a mature life, you know, in time we handle our emotions and they don't control us, but we are over them without stifling them. We may express them in an appropriate way. A grandfather will hug a grandchild with warmth and love, but he won't express that same warmth and love to somebody who's not a member of the family. And so, you know, we know how to handle our emotions, even though sometimes we are aroused and drawn by situations, by people, by surprising sudden, you know, occasions.
Well, you mentioned that there are basically three ways of dealing
with...
Right. Go ahead, Father.
Well, this book doesn't, you know, give all the answers, you know, to a complex emotional life. It tries to describe the bare essentials.
Right. And you talk about three ways of dealing with emotional swings, which people have to get the book if they want to find out more about those particular things. One of the things struck me, I was interesting, you were talking about, in a sense, neuroses and things like that. And you also mentioned something, it was kind of at the end of one chapter, you say, authentic spiritual directors do not bind others to themselves, but lead others to God, and then they let go of the ones they have led. Normal parents do the same. Why did you want to make that point?
Well, sometimes some spiritual directors will like to hold on to the person, which is immature, which is a sign that they're not good directors. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have parents who don't want to allow their children to be more independent. Maybe this is not an American problem. It certainly, I think, is a problem in Italy, where I live, well, I live now in the Vatican. But in Italy, they often speak about mamismo, of men being tied to their mothers, and many men living close to their mothers, even though they are in their 40s, but they have to constantly relate to their mother. Well, a mature person loves the parents, but the parents have their life, and adults have their own life. And so in the growing immaturity, we have to let go of the family and set up our own family and live our own lives.
You also mentioned,
and it's the same in the spiritual life.
Right. Gotcha. You also mentioned just before we go, the idea of scrupulosity. And you also say those who suffer from fear neurosis are usually intelligent, emotions are fundamentally sound. Why would they suffer from that if they've got everything else together?
Well, the problem is not an intellectual problem. The problem is the way how the emotions function, mm-hmm. and there is an excessive boosting of fear which replaces the conscience. But these are not people who are mentally sick. So they can understand the issue if it's explained to them. And that's why the diagrams that I give there, they show how the emotions function, and this helps in the step-by-step release from the excessive fear, which is the cause of the scrupulosity.
Very good. Thank you so much.
So intrinsically...
I think we're just out of time, unfortunately, Paul. Go ahead, finish your point.
Well, intrinsically, the emotions are good, and so neurotic persons don't have to sort of destroy their emotions, but help them to function in accord with their God-given nature.
Right. Very good. Thank you so much, Father. We're just out of time. Father Wojciech Giertych, his book, Faith and the Emotions, A Theological and Psychological Inquiry into the Human Heart. Quite interesting, a lot there. Published by EWTN, available through our catalog. And this has been Bookmark. Thanks for joining us for this international edition.